D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you, soon to be joined by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. So we started the show playing a clip from Colin Cowherd saying how he feels that Cam Ward is enough of a difference maker that he will lead the Tennessee Titans from worst to first in the AFC South and therefore make the playoffs. One texter says, Wes in Clarksville says, this is Wes in Hermitage. Too many Wes's. On the yards to points per game thing, I bet the Lions were worse in that category years ago when Stafford was throwing bombs and then lost every game. I'll have to check that. Please do, and get back to me on that. The other thing, too, Derek, I saw a couple of analysts predict Cam Ward's statistical output. Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated did a story where he made 100 predictions about the NFL season 100 days from the start of the season. And this was his prediction for Cam Ward's season statistically. And I want you to tell me how realistic you think this is. A 63% completion rate, 3,124 passing yards, 18 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 225 rushing yards, and 3 rushing touchdowns.
Is that doable?
Mm-hmm.
Is that realistic? Yeah, it is realistic. It's not. There's nothing saying that he can't come in here and do all those things. This is who he was in college, and I think it will translate to the NFL. This is a season that you build upon. If you look at all these quarterbacks over the last 10 years, majority of them have had 3,000 passing years. Within their rookie season, and I'm just talking about the last 5 or 6, 7 guys. I'm not going back to Joe Flacco and Ben Roethlisberger, those guys. But I think because of the NFL is more, offensive centric, you're going to have some of these numbers. There's only a few numbers that I'm truly worried about. And, that's the percentage, his completion percentage and his interceptions. If the interceptions are down and the completions are up, then I think we're doing something good. I think the yardage will come. The touchdowns will come. But I don't want to see, at the end of the season, Cam Ward thrown 25 interceptions. I don't want to see him have a season like Jameis Winston. Even though Jameis Winston threw for 5,000 yards and 35 touchdowns, he also threw 35 interceptions, about 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, something like that. That's not a productive year.
Let's bring in Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, we were talking about in the first hour from Colin Cowherd on his program. He was talking about the head coaches and quarterbacks who we think are going to be big difference makers for their respective franchises this season. And he singled out Cam Ward and said that he thinks that Cam Ward will make the Titans a playoff team this coming season. Now, I don't think any of us around here believe that is realistic, but indulge us for a moment.
Okay.
If Colin Cowherd were to be a prophet and Cam Ward does indeed lead the Titans to the playoffs, what do you think has to happen in order for that to come true?
Well, first off, his offensive line has to be a top 10 of the league. Let's put it that way. They have to run the football and they need to protect the quarterback. When I say top 10, it's in all facets. Bill Callahan's going to be the MVP among coaches. It'll be the offensive line that will lead the way. Second, the Tennessee Titans are going to have to play with the lead. That's why they're going to have to run the football. And I just heard a tail end of that with the interceptions from D-Mace. Mace, I think the interceptions are going to be high because I think they're going to be playing from behind.
Hmm.
And that's why I think we'll see Cam Ward let it rip because they're going to have to. So if Colin Cowherd's a prophet, the Tennessee Titans are going to be playing in low-scoring, high-run volume games. They're going to be protecting the clock, running the clock, protecting the lead, and they're going to have a rookie quarterback that's going to be making some of the right reads and the right decisions with a backup center to start the year and then the veteran center to come along who's going to be making the calls at the line. That's tough sledding right there. And there's a lot of things you can tell Colin Cowherd, all due respect to him, he didn't watch a lot of Tennessee Titans football. No one did last year.
I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm. And, no, I don't either. I don't either. But this is just a, oh, here's a coach who worked with Joe Burrow. Let's put him with the next number one overall pick and let's make let's give a hot take. That's fine. He can come. By all means, I would love for him to be right because I'm tired of seeing a bunch of losing in the city from the professional sports teams. But let's dive a bit deeper with that because there's a lot of factors that have to happen. And, oh, by the way, Denard Wilson is going to have to coach his ass off too on defense.
I agree with that about Denard Wilson. And before you came on, we were talking about rookie starting quarterbacks in the playoffs since 2004. I went back to 2000, and the first one that popped up was Ben Roethlisberger in 2004. And there have been a lot of rookie quarterbacks, more than I initially thought, who have started playoff games since that time. And one thing that we did some quick research as we were both discussing this, the common denominator was many of those rookie quarterbacks had the top scoring defenses in the NFL in terms of points allowed per game. And I do think that we've talked about
Do you have a couple of names there, Adam?
Sure. These are the 15 rookie starting quarterbacks in playoff games since 2004. And I did not include times where the incumbent starter got injured and a rookie had to start a playoff game.
Like, okay, I think so Big Ben's going to be in there.
Right. I think like TJ Yates started a playoff game. Okay. I'm not counting that.
Oh, poor TJ. Count him. Let's make it 16.
Skylar Thompson, I think, started a playoff game for the Dolphins a few years ago when Tua was injured. I'm not including that. Since 2004 in chronological order, Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan, Mark Sanchez, Andy Dalton, Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Mac Jones, Brock Purdy, CJ Stroud, Jaden Daniels, and Bo Nix.
Wow.
More than I thought. Like, I feel like I should have been more surprised by this when I did the research, but it's happened more than you think.
And it also tells you guys, like, you're reading off that list, and I'm thinking, man, playoffs, I mean, they've expanded the playoffs too. Maybe that's not going to be indicative of much.
But Roethlisberger had a top defense. Flacco had a Super top Bowl. Defense. Russell Wilson had a top defense.
Sanchez
had a top defense.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
thinking about the individual. I'm thinking like, okay, where'd the quarterback go on to do? I mean, we were like, man, he'd be the savior here if he went to the playoffs this year. Well, I mean, the hype would be through the roof, and the city and the team needs it. The team needs it. But man, I'm just thinking like long term how I view those quarterbacks versus what I was expecting. That's why I thought the list would be so short. But you're right; it's about the defense, it's about the mentality, and think about the era. They're kind of building a bridge between two eras of the NFL right there too.
Yeah, because the way I feel about it, Hutt, is, you know, I think half of the battle is keeping teams from scoring. And then the offense and the offensive coordinator can kind of proceed from there how cautious he wants to be or conservative he wants to be with the quarterback or how much of a chance he's going to take in certain areas. But when I look at this Titans team, and I want to get your opinion on this because we look at – I think because we're here, we see like all of the warts. We see it all. So sometimes you can't see what's good because there's so much bad. But if you look at the Titans and you just look at them at certain facets, this was a team that if you just look at their season, all but the Detroit game, Buffalo game, and the Commanders, you're talking about three of the top teams in the National Football League. Football League. They were within striking distance of winning those games. They were leading some of those games at half. But the theme was that each and every time was what? The quarterback. He's going to do something to mess up the game. And lo and behold, whether it was Will Levis or Mason Rudolph, that is ultimately what happened. And the way I look at it is, because of the division, the Titans may not be as far off in the division as we may think. Because make no mistake about it, this isn't a division that Houston just runs away with. It's not. Houston has sort of fell back a little bit too with their quarterback. And I understand they had a lot of injuries last year. I get that part. They're figuring it out. Indianapolis hadn't figured it out. Jacksonville, they go as their quarterback go, and they've been inconsistent because he's been inconsistent and he's been injured. So when you look at it, there is an avenue, I feel, for the Titans, but a lot of it hinges on whether they can develop the quarterback in a way where they're not putting a lot of pressure on him. And half of that comes from Denard Wilson and his defense not giving up damn near 30 points a game. But I understand, too, the offense, you can't put him in positions where the team, you know, the opposing team scores after two passes to the end zone, where you're basically in the red zone when you get the ball.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the Commanders game last year. I mean, it was 28-0 before they scored a point.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's 42-20 or whatever the final score was. I mean, that's, you know, I get your point, man. Like, you have to have the top-tier defense and the offensive line for the rookie quarterback to have success, because the rookie quarterback, we're looking back on those seasons, those 15 that Adam mentioned there, and, you know, hindsight is, oh, they're a playoff quarterback. But, man, go through some of those games, and, I mean, you're going to see the rookie quarterback taking his lumps. Right? Like that's you have to ride the wave of the season. And I mean, the waves are tough in the AFC South right now. Mm-hmm. Just ask CJ Stroud in year two. And now he's learning a new offense going into year three. I view this, and you mentioned like the late in the fourth quarter, the Titans in fourth quarter games, guys. And I think I speak for the vast majority of people here. Mm-hmm. Late in games, the Titans are going to give up the drive that allows the score. And if they have time on the clock, they're not going to go down and score. Like, if the other team has the football with 3 minutes left, they're going to go down and score to either tie or take the lead. And the Titans are going to get the ball back, and it's not going to matter because the defense didn't do its job. Mm-hmm. And that for a while, beginning of last year, you know, you're looking at all these stats for the Titans defense, and you know, it's all well and good. They're and by the way, they are getting a lot of possessions in their own territory a couple of times last year, but they're still allowing points. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying, Mace. They've got to come away with more takeaways. They have to get more three and outs. The way the Titans offense, you know, got off the field too fast, Titans defense has got to get the football back and make up for some of those possessions where the rookie quarterback's going to have to live and learn a bit, because that's part of this, is you got to go through a season like this. Not every year is going to be like CJ Stroud and Jaden Daniels.
No.
And I think, I mean, I'll speak for myself here. I'm not expecting that season. I'm going into this year thinking, just get to 2026 already. Seriously. Like I'm ready to speed this thing up, and unfortunately we have to go at the pace of a rookie quarterback here and a second year head coach who's, you know, coaching for his life.
Yeah, that's what he's. I think that, you know, from that standpoint, you know, he has to do a better job. But I am not gonna, you know, sit here and think that Brian Callahan can't get it done. Now, listen, you didn't get it quite right the first go around, and that was your task with Will Levis. Now you come in, you get a second opportunity, and not many coaches get a second opportunity to try to coach a first or second year quarterback. So now you get the second opportunity. What do you do with this second opportunity?
I want to jump in on that, because do you want me to do this now or after the break?
Let's do it after break. Let's do it after break.
Okay, because there's a weird, like, oh, he's going into year two and he's making some changes vibe right now with this whole little off-season thing that he's done. I want to play devil's advocate on this, because I think we're overlooking something.
All right, let's do that. 615-737-1025. We'll do that with Hutton. We'll also get into both the College World Series and the SEC's role in attempting to frame the college football playoff. We'll do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 102.5, 106.3, the game. D-Mace, Bingen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us. Hutton, you had a thought on Brian Callahan you wanted to get to, so the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, you guys, let me know if I'm crazy here, but for the, I mean, we're, I am hearing so much about this. I call it field day. Now I know they're doing these little point system stuff, but in middle school, like towards the end of the school year, we would have field day. We would go out and have like three-legged races or wheelbarrow races or, you know, balloon toss. Predating this era of the NFL, coaches would waste days that they had with players on going to water parks and having, you know, the dizzy bat races. It frustrated me because the coaches would complain about the time that they had with players in the offseason and then waste a day on dizzy bat races. And then they'd go off for the offseason and come back for training camp. But this point system leadership building thing, it is what it is. I'm not for it. I'm not against it. It's just an offseason thing that a coach is doing. I that's getting lumped into changes have been made or he's open to new things. I don't get that because this offseason, the changes have been in the front office, but by and large, not with Callahan or the coaching staff. I mean, they got rid of Colt Anderson. Great. He was fired. They have a new tight ends coach now. They brought in Mike McCoy, who's an offensive assistant. But the developers of the talent acquired, I'm being very technical here, the guys who are coaching up the players, by and large, remain the same. The play caller remains the same. So what changes are we actually going to see? I can't lump in the offseason, you know, you get 3 points for doing this. As some big deal for what adjustments have been made by a coach going into year number two with a rookie quarterback. And I'll say this again and stress this. This season and the improvement, the development of the players, to me, the success rate of that on the win-loss column comes down to two men. It comes down to Bill Callahan and then Bones Fossil being the version of Bill Callahan that everyone was hyping last year to an offensive line that wasn't that good. He's taking over a special teams unit. They gave up big plays. That was horrendous. That was awful. And now we're looking for adequate. And if we get that, we probably see more wins than we would have last year that resulted in games, in 50-50 games that were losses by a bad football team. That to me helps the rookie QB sort things out as you go. But what's happening in May and what's happening in June, by and large, will not be referenced in September.
No, it's not unless the team's not doing well and people reference it in a bad way, I think. You know, and then again, if it's going well, people may still reference what they, you know, did because they will see it as, you know, as a change that helped you know, in the winning process. So I guess it just depends on how the season goes, whether people look back on it.
To me, Mace, isn't it more about he's acknowledging without acknowledging that this team doesn't really have a number of guys who are leadership options, meaning he's got to find out who steps forward and grabs the brass ring a little bit here.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with two things. One, he understands that this team isn't as close as they need to be. So he's trying to find ways, which I agree with. Try to find any, yeah, especially after you didn't came off season where you won only two games. Man, you better try anything and everything to make sure this team is pointed in the right direction. Oh, yeah. So I don't – the stuff that he's doing as far as, you know, the games and the point system – I like it because he understands that we need more cohesiveness as a team. We need to bond more as a team. So not only is it practicing against one another or working out with one another, we're going to have these competitions where that breeds good things. That can only breed good things. But then, you know, you look at that part of what Bill Callahan is doing as far as trying to get these guys. But then also he understands that he doesn't – you said leadership qualities.
Yep.
I think they have guys that have leadership quality. What he's trying to find is the leader.
Right, because, right. Exactly.
Yeah, so –
candidates.
Yeah, exactly.
They have candidates. They don't have the guy.
Exactly, absolutely. And that is what he's looking for and that coaching staff is looking for, that leader Because even though we may have a bunch of guys, or let's say a handful of guys with leadership qualities, y'all haven't shown how y'all haven't presented how to lead to the rest of the other guys. You looked at Jeffrey Simmons last season. He was anointed a leader. What happened with him? A bunch of stuff that shouldn't have happened, and it sure diminished him as a leader. He could say what he wanted to say, but those things that we saw with our own eyes diminished him as a leader on this team. Maybe not with the, but as we look at it, like, man, you can't be a leader, but yet and still you're doing these things that leaders know not to do. So hopefully he's a lot better. That's what Brian Callahan and the coaching staff and the front office is trying to find out. Yeah, y'all talk about, y'all got the qualities of a leader, but we need to have a guy. And we do not have that guy. So I don't mind the things that he's doing right now. I really don't.
Well, so let's just, we can, I'm not trying to take up the whole segment here, but like, if they hit on Levis last year, if they hit on Levis, Levis is the guy.
Yes.
He's the guy you're talking about. So this can be Cam Ward, you know, but you just can't anoint him.
Exactly.
Right? So, but they truly believe he is that guy. They were sold on him 2 weeks before the draft. They didn't even take trade offers. Mm-hmm. Like, they know he's that guy. They truly believe that. I'm not saying everyone outside that building does. They are all in. They are convinced he's that guy. Now it's about finding the nucleus. They don't have that.
This is their version, whether people believe it or not, and I'm not trying to make the comparison in the player, but this is their version of Steve McNair. That's who Cam Ward is. He's their version of Steve McNair, of getting a rookie quarterback. Would they probably like him sit? Absolutely, they would probably like him sit and really gain that development that he needs. But they can't afford to let him sit. So to them, they want him to be the leader, just like Tennessee eventually, where Steve became, he and Eddie, but Steve became the leader. Steve became the voice. Steve became the heartbeat of this team along with Eddie. That's what they want from Cam Ward. They want that from him. But in the process, we need to find that guy until he reaches it, because we're not going to force it on him. We want him to be it, but we're not going to force it on him, because we tried that last year, and what happened?
It didn't work out well. Let's tie this into the first segment. All the quarterbacks that went to the playoffs with those defenses, right? All those defenses had a guy, you know? Like, I just always think about Baltimore, you know, at Ray Lewis. Mm-hmm. And that defense had two or three. Is Simmons that guy? You see what I'm saying? Like, that's what you're getting at. It's got to be – right now, the team will tell you when it's time. The team will allow the quarterback to take over when it's time. That's what you're saying with Steve and but who's leading the team? Because it can't be year two coach, because it was year one coach, and that he's got to have the coach in the locker room, but the guy that they look at and follow the Callahan way. And that's what they don't have right now. You've got a tight end who's already saying that that the rookie quarterback's already won over the locker room. I mean, come on, that's not the way of the NFL. And you got to have the alpha. We know that Jeffrey Simmons is an alpha, but is he the commander of the Titans locker room right now? And the answer is no.
Hutton, I want to get your thoughts on the college football playoff, as Heather Dinich and Pete Dammel report at ESPN. And a significant pivot from the highly publicized push for automatic qualifiers in the next iteration of the CFP, the SEC on Tuesday took a heightened interest in a 16-team model that would include the five highest-ranked conference champions and 11 at-large bids. But those two report there's a disconnect between the league's athletic directors and coaches, which appear Tuesday in public comments. Florida's and Texas A&M's ADs were both adamant about wanting automatic qualifiers, which would go along with the league adopting a 9-game league schedule. But coaches such as Lane Kiffin said they prefer a model with the 16 best teams, and Kirby Smart said he wanted a model that would include the most SEC teams possible, pointing to the SEC's other sports and their ability to flood the postseason because of strength of schedule. Where is this ending up in your mind?
They are going to change how they define strength of schedule to get into the college football playoff. Let me say, they're going to do that either way. there's two versions of this. The first version is the four-team automatic qualifiers. Teams like, or programs like Florida and Texas A&M want that because they're going to play this schedule that is going to keep them, they believe, some years out of the college football playoff, not in, because they're going to have more losses than teams that they're competing against to get in from other conferences. They want the automatic qualifiers if they're going to go to nine games in the SEC slate, because that's potentially, it's an extra win, but also an extra loss for them. And I think a lot of, everybody agrees that the SEC schedule is what it is. It's the gauntlet. They're also a part of this going to, you know, they're going to be playing, one of their non-conference games is going to be required to be, or it's been floated out there, required to be what, a Power Four program, not one of these, you know, directional programs that they're used to playing. So again, like they're in their mind, they're adding two extra games that are tough. I get that. The other Sankey and others are thinking, okay, why do we cap it on the number of teams that we have when no one's really complaining about basketball or baseball, and we're taking over those sports too? And you know, that it seems like if you cap it at four, that's a punishment there. This is just the counter of, okay, if you're going to complain ACC and Big 12 about getting two automatic qualifiers, let's just not have any. And then in a 16-team playoff, we'll take a Big 10 and SEC will take 11 or 12 of those spots. And then we'll see if you want the automatic qualifier or not. That's the underlying message here is, we'll take four, you take two. You don't like that? Okay, then instead of eight combined on the Power Two, we'll take 12, because if we're going to just simply rank it 1 through 16, SEC and Big Ten are by and large going to be fulfilling those spots. And that's the harsh reality of the ACC and the Big 12 as to why they will take their two and like it, and because they're guaranteed two, when in some years they may just get one and they'll be looking up at the one, which is the conference. And it's more about business than it is for good of the game.
And I know that it would never happen. I am glad that the CFP is going to the straight seeding model this coming season so that the top four teams get the buys. So we don't, no disrespect to Arizona State and Boise State, but they should have been in the first round. They shouldn't have received a bye just based on
if the ratings were high, it would be exactly the way it was.
That is fair. And I know it would never happen, but Lane Kiffin floated the idea of, hey, no automatic qualifiers. The top 16 teams are the top 16 that get in. I know it would never happen, but I don't hate the idea.
I don't hate it. The problem with that is you have a lot of different networks, a lot of businessmen behind the scenes that are trying to make the regular season more impactful, okay? So that diminishes the value of Big 12 and ACC football during the regular season. Because, I mean, if you're just, it's all up, everything was about the 14 playoff, everything. And then there was the rest of the bowls. Now everything's about the college football playoff, and it has diminished the rest of bowl season. It has. We don't talk about the other bowls in the race for certain bowl games anymore. Those days are behind us. Unless it's in your city and you want to go catch a football game, which is great, but the anticipation just isn't there. Now you want to have more conferences involved for spots in that ultimate prize because it makes the regular season more impactful on a week-to-week basis, and the networks are happy, they're paying more money, the rising tide lifts all ships, and it also makes the inventory for the SEC and the Big Ten more valuable because they're getting more teams in. In essence, that's why you want to have conference championships matter, because you do have other networks, including the network that SEC is involved with, ESPN, who also owns the ACC. They need that inventory more valuable than less. And if you just went straight 1 through 16, no conference champs, you just ordered it, Adam, I'm here to tell you, man, there wouldn't be much to watch in the ACC.
I hear you, but I think that Lane Kiffin is a bit of a mad genius. Hey, so whenever he says something, I tend to listen.
Lane always catches people's attention.
Here's the other thing, that play-in thing for the SEC and the Big Ten, that's also based on something Lane Kiffin said. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't wrong, even though last year he was wrong, where he said, hey, right now we're why does it benefit us to want to go play in Atlanta for the SEC title? Remember this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, because it should we even try to get to that game? Well, he could have used it last year, turns out. But they can't have coaches say that. That makes the playoff matter more than the conference title. They don't want that. And I'm here to tell you, you're going to have the 3 versus 6, and you're going to have the 3 versus 6 and the 4 versus 5, because what that does, you do it based on your SEC win percentage, not your out-of-conference percentage, just your SEC win percentage, and it keeps the 6th seed alive for a spot in the playoff if you get 4 guaranteed, even if you have a bad year, according to the strength of schedule now and how they're viewing it. You can still get in to the playoff and have a shot because you're playing the tougher schedule. You're playing the 9th game in the SEC. You end up going to the play-in with a chance to get the 3rd and the 4th automatic qualifiers, and it makes the SEC slate during the regular season more important. You're focused on those games. Those games matter. You slip up, you can still win your way back in, and you have your seeds 1 and 2. There is no bye week, by the way, moving forward in this plan for the college football playoff. Seeds 1 and 2 in your conference would get the bye. They're not playing that championship weekend. That's their bye week before the playoff begins. And then you have the 4 other teams behind them play for the right to get in. That is the ultimate prize for the SEC. It's more money. It's an extra game. Everybody's going to make more money. More teams have a chance to get into the playoff for the guaranteed spots. And it makes your regular season massive week to week within the Southeastern Conference. That's why they're going to do it. And it shuts up people like Lane Kiffin, because you will want to play in those games. You'll have to.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, as he does every Wednesday afternoon. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys. Can we just go back to the BCS?
Hey, once the horse is out the barn, that's it. Sounds good, don't it?
Life was easier when
Derek Mason in college.
Yes, life was easier when a computer figured out everything for us.
But then they said the computer was fixed.
Yes,
so it really didn't matter.
Yeah, don't ask ChatGPT; it already knows the champion next year.
Yes,
there you go.
Thanks, Hutton.
All right, later, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. I have a trivia question for all of you as we head to our next segment. Can you name the 3 players who have strung together active? This is an active streak, by the way. Can you name the 3 players who have strung together 3 consecutive seasons of 1,000 rushing yards? There are 3 active streaks of at least 3 seasons of 1,000 rushing yards. Can you name the running backs? And I will reveal the answer on the other side, because it has something to do with, well, the local professional football team. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. So my trivia question for all of you. There are 3 players in the NFL who have active streaks of at least 3 seasons with 1,000 rushing yards. I would ask Derek to name them, but I've already spoiled it for him. Those 3 running backs: Derrick Henry, no duh. Najee Harris, and Tony Pollard. They are the 3 running backs with active streaks of at least 3 consecutive years with 1,000 rushing yards. Derrick Henry, not a surprise.
Yes.
Najee Harris, yeah. Pretty surprising. Tony Pollard, I bet you could throw him in there too in that surprising category. But as we're talking about the things that the Titans need to do to be able to be successful, we talked about the defense, and we'll talk more about that tomorrow, I'm sure. But a running game is something that Derek has emphasized. And Tony Pollard, you know, he had a career high last season, just under 1,100 rushing yards. But he seemed to slow down as the season progressed. He was dealing with an ankle injury, so there's your reason. He averaged 16.3 attempts per game, which was a career high. But I would say that he wasn't very efficient. He had 4.2 yards per carry, which ranked 29th out of 41 qualified running backs. there is a fancy stat called success rate, which basically means how many yards you gain depending on the down. It's about keeping the offense on schedule. It uses the expected points added metric, EPA. He had a success rate last season of 35%, which was 33rd out of 41 qualified running backs. So I would say that those numbers tell me that Tony Pollard, despite being a 1,000-yard back, wasn't incredibly efficient. Now you could blame the offensive line perhaps, but Brian Callahan has stressed, and we can play that clip in a minute, Brian Callahan has stressed trying to keep Tony Pollard fresh over the course of the season so that he can maintain that strong start that he had, if I remember the strong start correctly, that he can maintain his play over the course of the season. And that falls on the shoulders of Tajay Spears. Tajay Spears had 84 carries last season. He was injured for part of the season. He averaged 7 attempts per game. The Titans are going to need a lot more from Tajay Spears in order to keep Tony Pollard fresh so that Tony Pollard can help Cam Ward.
Yeah, if you look at Pollard, I think Pollard is a hell of a back. I think he's one of those guys that just does his job, and you know, he's not looking for the fanfare or anything else. He's just a good player. He's tough, you know, and if you look at his career, he's not – I think you got to hold him under that 250 carries per season.
He broke out as the 1B back, right, in Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott.
Absolutely.
Then he took over for Ezekiel Elliott, and he was good.
Yeah.
But I do think that you could see over the course of the season last season that Tony Pollard's production seemed to diminish as it progressed, mostly, again, because of an injury he was dealing with that I think forced him to miss one game and then played through it near the end of the season. But Brian Callahan, he knows the importance of having multiple backs capable of carrying the load. Go back to Cincinnati. I'm thinking of 2022 in particular. What is that sound?
Oh, that's the commercial.
Is there an airplane? I mean, we are close to the airport. I was like, hopefully there's not an airplane headed directly towards our studio.
Battery commercial.
But Callahan knows the benefits of having multiple backs who can carry the load. I remember back in 2022 with Cincinnati, Joe Mixon was the workhorse back for the Bengals, but they also had Samaje Perine, who played an important role for that team. So ideally, Pollard can be Mixon and Spears can be Perine in this example.
See, that's what has been the problem here, because they're not getting enough production from Tajay Spears and any back behind Pollard. They're not getting the production that they need. Pollard, again, they got to keep him under that 250. He needs to be more like a 225, somewhere around there. I think if he gets to that point, you're going to be able to maximize the true player that he is at the running back position. And then, obviously, you expect the offensive line to be better, or hope that they're better than what they were last year. But I think with him, he's not like Derrick Henry. The more times Derrick Henry got the ball, the better he became. I think there is there's a cap to Pollard. I think, you know, the 16 per game, you know, that was the highest of his career. And that seems pretty low, don't it? 16 carries per game? That seems pretty low. But I think the way the Titans want to operate and what kind of back he is, I think he's more so better at, you know, maybe 15. Or let's just find a way to keep it under that 250. Because if you have Spears carrying the ball over 100 times, then that helps Pollard, you know, rest somewhat. But that's why they went and drafted the kid Mullins from Michigan. He was a damn near 1,000-yard rusher with Michigan last season. I think he had like 900 or something yards.
So Pollard,
but he's a powerful back.
Mm-hmm. Pollard, I'm sorry to step on you there. Pollard averaged 16.3 attempts per game. which was tied with Alvin Kamara. Here are the running backs that averaged more attempts per game last season than qualified running backs that averaged more attempts per game last season than Tony Pollard. Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, Kyren Williams, Derrick Henry, Bijan Robinson, Josh Jacobs, Joe Mixon. Is it Chuba? It's Chuba Hubbard, right? It's not Chuba. Chuba Hubbard. That's it, because he was and then Kamara and Pollard. So but Pollard was top 10 in carries per game.
But here's let me rephrase that, because when I look at it, and that's why I was, I'm like 16 attempts per game. That doesn't seem like a lot. That number baffles me.
Top 10 among qualified running backs.
That doesn't, like, you should be able to carry the ball 16 times a game, but it's not how many times he carries it. It's when he carries it. I think they need a fresher Pollard toward the end of the season than not. So if you, that's why it's, you know, get it underneath that 250. Let's not use him, or let's not use him as much at the beginning, knowing that, you know, we're going to need him, you know, because the quarterback's going to need him. He's one of the quarterback's best friends beside the offensive line. They're going to need him and his power running more so the second half of the season rather than the first half. So that's why you go out and draft the Mullins. That's why Tajay Spears needs to come back fully healthy and ready to roll. Because if we can save some of the tread on Pollard at the beginning, he's a better back at the end, because he does, even he may be getting the 16 carries, but it looks different than what it did at the beginning of the season.
In terms of just total attempts, not per game, total attempts, he was eighth in the NFL behind Barkley, Henry, Kyren Williams, Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, Josh Jacobs, and Najee Harris.
Yeah, so the Titans got to find a way to lessen the workload, especially at the beginning of the season, because they're going to need Pollard at the end of the season, because he's a guy, he's a veteran guy. He's you know, he's played on teams that were fighting at the end to try to make a playoff run when he was with Dallas. So, excuse me. So, to me, it's not so much of 16 attempts per game, because, again, that seems low to me. It's about where those carries come and when they come. If I can get a bulk of those carries toward the end of the season where he's really helping us, then okay, that's why Spears and Mullins, these guys need to come into camp ready to take a bulk of the carries away from Pollard. Not because I think they're better than Pollard, but because I think it will help Pollard, which in turn will help the quarterback, which in turn will help the Tennessee Titans.
615-737-1025. Practice is over at St. Thomas Sports Park, so all of the reporters who are there are tweeting their updates, because now the embargo has been lifted. So we'll take a look at what those reporters saw at practice. I also want to talk about J.C. Latham. We know that J.C. Latham is moving from left tackle to right tackle, but he's also undergone a major transformation, and he detailed what was behind that on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. So we'll play for that. We'll play that for you next, as well as get our updates from Titans practice. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.